Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Carolyn Baker, and we're talking about infinite possibility. And in these dire times, that's a wonderful idea. So please elaborate.
Well, you know, so many people who do not turn away from our global predicament have opinions, and we all have opinions, just like we all have noses. But a lot of people, who do not turn away and are really willing to look at the crisis, some say, absolutely, unequivocally, we are going extinct. All species are going extinct. There will be no life on this earth in 20 years or whatever their timeline is. And then there are the folks on the other side, as we know, and we've talked about, who you know, absolutely insist that there are solutions to these problems. And, you know, if we just have more COP conferences and more nations commit to do this and do that, and here's the place that Andrew and I are coming from, and I'm certainly coming from in my work as a student of Carl Jung, is that place of uncertainty in which we hold the tension of the opposites. We don't say, absolutely, you know, as Meg Wheatley in that quote says, you know, we don't say, oh, it's all going to be wonderful, or it's all, you know, absolutely catastrophic in the worst sense of the word. What we have to do, and this is really hard for Americans because this is not who we are as Americans. Our indigenous relatives all over the planet are much more used to holding the tension of the opposites, holding on the one hand these horrible problems that confront us that are getting worse every day, and the purpose and the meaning that we find in these problems and the joy that we find paradoxically as we grieve these losses. So that is a spiritual practice that I write about, that I assist people in using for themselves, so that we are not walking around in this place of optimist, pessimist, as Meg Wheatley writes about, but rather we're holding the largest possible picture.
You know, Carolyn, this reminds me of a phrase that I picked up in the book that you and Andrew have put together, Radical Regeneration, is the idea we're in a planetary hospice situation.
Yes.
So help us understand what you mean by that.
Right. So, you know, so many things are dying. So much of the planet is dying. We had, more than 30,000 people killed in this most recent earthquake in the Middle East. We have mass shootings every day. So there's this huge theme of death that is all around us. And not only literal death, but psychological and spiritual death. And so there are some things that need to die. And we can't be the judge of what should and what shouldn't die. But the reality is a lot of things and a lot of people are dying. And so we work to be present as hospice workers alongside this death, as well as confronting our own death, as well as realizing our own limitations and finitude. And alongside the death is new life being born in many ways. alongside the grief that we are feeling, if we fully allow it, really allow ourselves to feel it, we're also going to experience joy. I'm pretty sure that you've had on your show Frances Weller, who's kind of your neighbor.
That's right.
And I consider him the grief sage of all time. And he talks about the joy that we experience when we allow ourselves to fully feel the grief. So in that sense, we're not hospice workers, we're also midwives, which we talk about in the book. We're death doulas on one hand, and we're midwives to accompany the birth of new people and new things at this time. And that's holding the tension of the opposites.
Well, that just takes me. I have to pick up this book of poetry.
Okay.
Some time ago, I did an interview with a good friend, actually, and she has written this very small book of poetry. And there is one particular poem that I think is really applicable at this time, and she calls it Feeling Him Close, and I'm going to read it.
Sure.
And she says, she writes, "Death slouched outside my window last night, leaning against the wall, acting as if he had all the time in the world. All night I felt him there as I floated at the top layer of sleep with my hand on my beloved's broad chest. I wasn't afraid that he was coming for us. I knew that he just wanted me to feel him close. Some of the people he visits, he walks right in and sits at the supper table so they can smell his breath real close up. Last night, Death loitered by my house, but he didn't come in, and I was glad. He wouldn't be getting in bed with us just yet. Somehow I knew that much. My friend thought she knew that too. And then one day he showed up in a scan of her body all of a sudden. Now she doesn't seem to mind that he drapes himself on her sofa or that he likes to stroke her hair. She made friends with him right away, and though they are an odd couple, her looking so healthy and all, we're getting used to their relationship. She is actually glowing, and the more he hangs around, the more we can accept his good points, like one of those handsome bad boys with a heart of gold, the ones that take you in a fast car to places you never thought you'd go. He might decide he wants to take her away, which would break our hearts. But she smiles and tells us that it's only a matter of time. He will take us all." Death, feeling us close. And that just reminds me of the hospice that you're talking about, if any of us have ever done any caretaking of someone who is dying, we know that precious, precious energy field that we enter as someone transitions.
Yes.
So it's holding the grief, as in that poem, holding the grief. It's going to take her away, but holding also the joy, the stroking of the hair, making friends. There's that, again, that paradox, holding the both and.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I would like to also talk about a little bit about that which some people are putting their hopes on, and that's AI, artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. And I know that it was really great in what you've written and what you and Andrew have written. You talk about, you quote someone named Shoshana Zuboff, mm-hmm. who have said, "We're actually living in an invisible concentration camp." Oh, wow. That just like, what? What does she mean? I mean, that here with all the algorithms that we're subjected to and that really count non-organic life as the essential thing, it causes us to be imprisoned in some way. Any comments on that?
Yeah, Shoshana Zuboff has written this spectacular book called The Age of Surveillance Capitalism. And long story short, she considers AI to be a kind of invisible concentration camp. She talks about, I believe it's either her or Harari, the great author Jonathan Harari, I'm not saying the name correctly, who speaks about a bloodless coup that is taking place with our minds right now, that in a way data has become a religion. And, you know, for those people who hold out that AI is going to be some kind of savior in the climate chaos that we're facing, you know, it could be helpful as far as really, really taking the problem away. I don't buy that for 1 minute, but just as it could be helpful in some ways, it could also be catastrophic.
Mm-hmm.
It could also be in the hands of the authoritarian wave that is happening now in the world. It could be a very, very disastrous thing. One of the terrifying realities of our time is that millions of people in the United States and around the world would be perfectly happy to embrace fascism. Often they don't even know how to define the word. But for them, fascism means that some guy, usually a white guy, will make all the decisions for them and protect them from the other. From the other race or the other gender or the other gender identity or the poor or whatever feels threatening. And right now, the United States is hanging by its fingernails off the cliff of democracy, and it's going to take very little for us to fall off the cliff. So I am not a fan of AI generally. And certainly not as we are being confronted with these enormous, truly existential issues.
Yes, yes. I understand that. And I understand the need, because I can remember in my life of wanting somebody to say, oh, this is the way, the truth, and the light. And so yeah, all you need to do is just do this and we'll protect you. And I can remember living in that way. And now I hope my eyes are open and I realize that there's something more. And I'd like to, in this next segment, to talk about the rigorous spiritual practices of sacred activism and find out your thoughts on that. I'm here with Dr. Carolyn Baker, and she, along with Andrew Harvey, are the co-authors of Radical Regeneration. And her website is carolynbaker.net to find out more about her work. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Dr. Carolyn Baker, and we're talking about lots of things, about the daunting times that we're living in right now. And in fact, one of her books is Undaunted, Living Fiercely into Climate Meltdown in an Authoritarian World, and also co-author with Andrew Harvey of Radical Regeneration, Sacred Activism, and the Renewal of the World. And she, along with Andrew, they work at the Institute for Sacred Activism. And so let's talk about that. What is sacred activism, and how can it be of help in these dire times?
Sacred activism is quite simply the marriage of activism and spirituality. If the activist is not tempered with a spiritual sense or sensibility, and is not doing inner work on himself or herself, it's quite likely that they're going to burn out, because it's as if the fires of activism can burn one up. Conversely, if a person who has a spiritual path is not connected with some kind of activism, then he or she can just become very naive and withdrawn and disengaged from the earth and from others, all the while thinking that they're very engaged, perhaps. So bringing together spirituality and activism helps to temper the activist, but also inspire him or her in the directions that go deeper than just the cause that he or she is fighting for. And so the Institute for Sacred Activism, Andrew's work, my work, we incorporate in all of our work spiritual practices that help us not only take care of ourselves, but to be more dynamic and more empowered as we do our work in the world and for the world.
I would love for you to help us understand the word divine. It's a little bit hard to understand, and I know that most likely Andrew uses that term a lot, the divine, and maybe you do too, Carolyn. So what does that mean, to be a divine human being?
Well, the word that I prefer is sacred. You know, I was raised in right-wing fundamentalist Christianity, and divine has always been synonymous with God somehow, you know, a Christian God. Sacred for me is a preferred word. The very first book that I wrote on the global crisis back in 2008 was called Sacred Demise. And so sacred means for me set apart, dedicated, consecrated, holy, borderline religious terms, but really having to do with the ultimate meaning and purpose of our being. And we bring that together into our lives with the day-to-day, with the material, with the human obligations and relationships that we have.
So in sacredness, does it also encompass something like reverence?
Absolutely. Yes, indeed. Reverence and respect for the ultimate, for that which we can't fully explain or understand.
I know that you also wrote a book about our relationship with animals. I don't recall the name of it.
Well, but that's in Radical Regeneration. Remember, Radical Regeneration is a book of, it's a quartet of four books that Andrew and I wrote. The first one, Savage Grace. The second, Saving Animals from Ourselves. The third book that we wrote, Return to Joy, And then we wrote a separate book called Radical Regeneration. And all four of those books are in Radical Regeneration, Sacred Activism, and the Renewal of the World.
And so if you talk about the word joy, how does that relate to sacred activism? Is that a component of it?
Here again is where we all are being challenged. If we're serious about the global crisis and we want to do something to respond to it, we have to readjust our thinking around these opposites or so-called opposites. Joy is the other side of grief. Joy is the other side of loss and pain and suffering. Mary Oliver said, "We shake with grief. We shake with joy." What a time these two have, housed as they are in the same body. So the joy is something that doesn't come that we necessarily seek for it. It happens in some of the most unexpected moments. It can happen in moments of profound unhappiness. One example is when a woman gives birth. There is suffering and pain and sorrow and anxiety and fear. And then when the child comes forth, there is unspeakable joy. And this can happen to people sometimes simultaneously. Viktor Frankl talked about being there in Auschwitz and in the midst of horrific suffering and having moments of joy. So did Nelson Mandela in his prison cell that he was in for 27 years.
Right, right. What would you say about the need in these times to avoid isolating ourselves and the need to reach out, to connect with others? Because we're coming off of sheltering in place, and many of us are very used to, I'm having a hard time getting back out into the world myself.
Right.
What would you say about isolation?
I would say that both are absolutely necessary. One of the things we discovered during the pandemic is, you know, the importance of solitude, that we needed this time to pull back and regather, and that is inspiring and, for many people, energizing. We also need to be engaged. We need to be out there, and certainly as a person who wants to respond to this crisis, we don't just respond with spiritual practices, which Radical Regeneration is full of, which my book Undaunted is full of. But we need to be giving, giving, giving. And what Andrew says in his work on sacred activism is to follow the heartbreak. What is breaking your heart? Follow that. Let that call you into whatever service is right for you to be doing. Just follow the heartbreak.
Well, I'm thinking in following the heartbreak, that's following what you love then.
Yes,
it won't break your heart unless you're in love with it.
Exactly. Exactly. Absolutely.
Going back to the caterpillar and what happens as it liquefies is that it starts within that cocoon, the gathering of imaginal cells. Would you say that those of us who are committed to a rigorous spiritual practice and also taking that actively into the world with kindness and compassion, are we a collective kind of being part of that imaginal cells that are collecting for together?
Absolutely. Absolutely. For myself, I don't see any other purpose in my existence. You know, that is who I am and what I came here to do. That's what makes the difference, is people many, many thousands and millions of people who are willing to do the spiritual work and also go out there and be sacred activists, bodhisattvas, and spiritual warriors in the world.
Yes, yes. So committing to that spiritual practice and committing to a radical mutation of humankind, so to speak.
And a commitment to becoming an elder.
Mm.
Now, you and I are of a certain age. And so that's how elder in this culture is defined. But an elder can be anyone. An elder is not synonymous with older. I've met many young people who are wise beyond their years and are truly elders in this world because they're doing the sacred work and the sacred activism at the same time. So cherishing wisdom above intellect. You know, wisdom is only gained through suffering and deep work on oneself. And we have to be spiritually prepared to face tremendous fear and hopelessness. And we must not embrace bizarre conspiracy theories in an attempt to relieve the anguish of uncertainty in a culture that demands ironclad answers. We have to now concentrate all of our emotional and spiritual and political energies on doing all we can to feed, nourish, support, and expand the birth that is already here and that is continuing to happen.
Oh, Carolyn, thank you so much for being with us today. What a profound vision you've given us. I've been speaking with Dr. Carolyn Baker, and she's the co-author of Radical Regeneration, Sacred Activism, and the Renewal of the World. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3782.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore new dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hello, I'm Matthew Fox, author of A Way to God. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about Thomas Merton's creation spirituality journey.
next Alternative Radio, hear Chalmers Johnson on Blowback, the Consequences of U.S. Foreign Policy. That's Alternative Radio, Wednesday afternoons at 4, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby.
Hey, this is a bonus.